All right, welcome to the Young Turks. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur. Okay, as usual, huge show for you. A little bit later in the program, North Korea disaster headed our direction. Lindsey Graham says some things that are inhuman. That word is apt. You will see. Just, you know, when he challenges Trump a little bit and you think, oh, maybe Lindsey Graham's not so bad. No, he's a really bad dude. So I'm going to explain that a little bit later in the show. Democrats decide that they're going to work with the Republicans on taxes. Yeah, that's a great idea, except I believe it is, in fact, a disastrous idea. What happened to resist? What happened to resist? All right, we'll get to that a little bit later in the program. And then, of course, there's a million Donald Trump nonsense, including the Seth Rich conspiracy. Very interesting news on that. And yet another crime that Donald Trump might have admitted to. Having said all that, let us start with Republican dissension. Okay. Our graphics even crack me up. Oftentimes I see him for the first time on the show. Anyway, Jeff Flake is a Republican senator from Arizona, but he's not having Donald Trump, kind of. I'll tell you at the NYA, he's a hypocrite on a lot of this stuff. But boy, did he release a book that is highly critical of his Republican president. Flake on Tuesday released Conscience of a Conservative. It is an ode to Barry Goldwater, another Republican from Arizona. A book condemning his party's willingness to embrace alternative facts, anti-immigration fervor, and Trump himself. There's a chapter called, in fact, My Party is in Denial About Donald Trump. Let me give you a couple of quotes and then I will show you what he said this morning on TV. He said that unnerving silence in the face of an erratic executive branch is an abdication, and those in positions of leadership bear particular responsibility. He's talking about his fellow Republicans and how they are not holding Trump accountable. So, and then one more here, he says, we have taken our institutions conducive to freedom for granted as we have engaged in one of the more reckless periods of politics in our history. Now, the reason why this is all very important is because once Donald Trump loses a critical mass of Republicans in Congress, then he is in a world of trouble if an investigation finds anything that he did wrong. And the way things are going, it is possible they will find many things that he did wrong. If the Republicans do not hold behind him, then he won't have any political capital and he won't be able to resist calls for his resignation. Now, we're a long way from there, but it begins on a road just like this with Republican senators raising their hands and going, I'm not with him. And by the way, Jeff Flake does not write this book because he is a person who's willing to put politics aside and stand on principle. No, he's a deeply political creature. Politics is his profession. And don't be naive about this. It is obvious that Donald Trump now is not polling well in Arizona. And John McCain, by the way, won his seat with a greater margin in Arizona than Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton. So Flake is seeing the handwriting on the wall and saying, I got to pull the chute and I got to pull it right now. He's among the first. He definitely will not be among the last. So to give you a sense of how much of a warpath he's on against a president in his own party, let's now watch him on TV this morning.
A conservative is nothing, if particularly in foreign policy, if he's not measured and sober and predictable. Our allies need to know that. We need to embrace and recognize our adversaries, and to do otherwise is not conservative.
Yeah, measured and sober. Clearly not Trump. So it's quite obvious what he's saying. He's, as he says throughout the book, he's reckless and a wild guy that is erratic and unpredictable and not, Jeff Flake claims, not what a conservative is. Depends on your definition of conservative. But certainly we all agree not what we want in our commander in chief. But he's got a lot more where that came from.
With regard to foreign policy, my biggest concern is, as I mentioned, we have always stood for principles and have done so in a sober, consistent, predictable manner. And chaos is the last thing that our allies and our adversaries need to be seeing. And I'm afraid they're seeing too much of that. And our respect for international institutions that we had a hand in or were the major part in building, like NATO, the World Trade Organization, These kind of things, I think that we need to respect and utilize to hold our place in the world. And I wonder about our standing around the world now.
Yeah. Now, look, that is not a Democratic senator. That's a Republican senator saying, I'm worried about our standing in the world because of how unpredictable and unstable this president is. And look, if you live in the objective world, it is super obvious what he's saying. But a lot of Republicans do not. Certainly, the Republican politicians oftentimes don't seem to. So again, this is bold, and it gives you a sign of things to come for him to be this harsh about the president. But there's more.
I think to be conservative can't be to embrace conspiracy theories or to talk about alternative facts. There are truths that are self-evident, and we have to, as a country, agree on certain things. If we don't, we're going to have a hard time moving ahead and solving the problems.
Hard times ahead.
Look, in the past, the pre-Trump era, these were not controversial statements. We should all agree to the same facts and not make up things. And we should support NATO, our top alliance. Not remotely controversial. But now in the Trump era, he's like, whoa, a Republican saying that we shouldn't make up facts. Does Jeff Flake want to switch parties? I mean, people are starting to speculate. And by the way, he most certainly does not. The name of the book is Conscience of a Conservative. He's just saying a conservative also shouldn't lie. And if you're a conservative, I hope you agree with that. He's got more.
But what were the big missed opportunities?
I think the Comey firing, the timing of it. You know, you can fire the FBI director. Could have said that, hey, last year did some things that he shouldn't have done. The way he handled the campaign wasn't good. But the reason given that, hey, the Russia investigation, that should have set off more alarm bells, I think, than it did. And I think going forward, we ought to be careful.
Of course. I mean, think about it, guys. He admitted to obstruction of justice in public. We've just moved on with our lives. And I know that the investigation is ongoing, and you've got to give it time. They have to be inordinately careful. And they're certainly not presupposing anything. But the president said, yeah, I fired the head of the FBI because of the Russia investigation. That investigation is investigating him. He admitted the obstruction of justice. So here's a senator going, well, I don't really want to be on that boat. And is that going to come back to bite him? Almost certainly. So yeah, I'm a little concerned that he fired the FBI director investigating him. These are obvious things. But in today's world, it is significant news that a Republican senator admits to things that are obvious. And what did I tell you guys? The minute they start heading out the door, that's when Trump's in real trouble. So apparently, Flake thinks this guy is not going to make it, and I'm going to be the first one off the boat. One last one.
And I'm very concerned about where the party is going and the kind of the anti-immigration fervor. That's not the place the Republican Party wants to be in the future.
And it's just image, I understand that, but image is important. There's a level of meanness to conservatism now in this country that's bothersome.
I do talk about that in the book, that you have to be meaner somehow. And that is not a conservative value.
Well, you could have fooled me. Maybe it wasn't initially, and maybe Flake wants to get back to an era where we were having debates without a lot of the vitriol, fear, and hate involved. But that is obviously an admission on his part that it is his party that is driving that. Again, in the objective world, that's super obvious. But that also gives you a sense of the demographics of Arizona. Please, let's not be politically naive here. Jeff Flake is, of course, considering his reelection. And by the way, Donald Trump has promised that he will primary Jeff Flake and is looking for a Republican to primary him, and he will support that primary. So there's that bit of politics involved. And the reason he's saying, hey, man, let's not do the anti-immigration fervor, is because he's in a border state. In the old days, being in a border state meant that you were going to, especially if you're a Republican, actually rally anti-immigration fervor and put that out there even more fervently. But these days, he's like, I see the numbers in Arizona. Is our party anti-immigrant? We shouldn't be anti-immigrant. And now, finally, this is a lot of talk, but Let's go to Josh Barrow from Business Insider, who points out there are Republicans in the Senate, Richard Byrne, Chuck Grassley come to mind, who have been measured in their rhetoric but have taken substantial actions to hold Trump accountable for his lawlessness. Flake is taking a less impressive approach, complaining loudly about Trump and doing very little about him. So keep in mind here, Jeff Flake is trying to have it both ways. Whoa, watch out for Trump, I'm not on his side. But so far as I can tell, so far on every single major vote, he has backed Donald Trump. So this is a game that a lot of Republicans played under George Bush, especially as he became more and more unpopular. Well, I'm a little concerned about George Bush. Tax cuts for the rich that George Bush was pushing. Yes, 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 yes. You cuts to programs. Yes, 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 yes. So eventually, Senator Flake, these words are good and important and interesting, but you're going to have to back them up. Okay, now let's go to one more story in this segment, and it goes to old friend Kellyanne Conway. So Kellyanne Conway is going to go on TV and praise Donald Trump in uncomfortable, awkward ways. Now, there's a very good reason for this, as you're going to see in a sec. But first, let's watch.
I said to him something that day I'm going to repeat now to my colleagues in the White House. I said to him, I'd like to say, Mr. Trump, I'll never address you by your first name, and I don't consider myself your peer. And he said, okay, and that sounds great. I mean, he's a very positive person, frankly, great boss for women. And the reason I said that was because I do think that it's important to set up that level of deference and humility when you've got someone who's your boss, now the President of the United States, now the Chief of Staff, a General, a Secretary, who is clearly your senior, you know, your superior.
That was so uncomfortable. You know, when I talk to Donald Trump, I do not use his first name. I say, dear sir, you are my superior. And she says at the end, you don't have to give proper deference, including to General Kelly, who's now the Chief of Staff. In other words, if I'm up for a position, remember General Kelly, of course I will submit to you as I do Donald Trump, because he is my superior. And by the way, he is great with women. Am I on Fox News? Is the President watching this? Remember, Mr. President, who is loyal to you and who will compliment you in a way that will tickle your fancy. And if we know one thing about Donald Trump, he loves to be complimented. Gee, I wonder what Kelly, I'm sorry, I don't mean to refer to you by your first name, Kellyanne. I meant Miss Conway, ma'am. Okay, one more here.
It's very important that people not treat elected officials like the president and the vice president as their peers. Again,
no,
don't read into that, everybody.
I think that everybody has respect for the office, and they want that kind of relationship between the staff and the president at the White House, to be sure.
You know, the one thing that Donald Trump loves is, now remember who the boss is. One of the reasons that was given as a possibility why Scaramucci was fired is not because of his outrageous statements, but because Donald Trump thought he was stealing the spotlight. So that's why Kellyanne Conway comes on here and is like, you are the alpha male, I am not your peer, I am not your peer. Oh, it's so embarrassing, wonderfully embarrassing. Okay, now let's find out why. We go to Alex Pfeiffer at the Daily Caller. Now that's a conservative publication, normally very untrustworthy, but here it is about what's going on inside the White House, and they have some sources there. So they say, quote, there is chatter within the White House that Kellyanne Conway is being looked at as the next communications director. Really? Color me surprised. Of course! That this was her audition on Fox. Is the president's TV set to Fox? Of course it is. Okay, I'm gonna go on there. Tell him to watch, tell him to watch. Oh no, the dear leader. The dear leader is, I can't look at him because it's like looking into the sun. He bowls a perfect 300. He once shot a 30 in golf. couple of par fives, you understand. He has no anus. No, that's right, that's Kim Jong-un. Anyway, but either way, he's not my peer. I have to give him deference. I can never call him by his first name. Please, please hire me. Wonderfully pathetic. We'll be right back. All right, Back on the Young Turks, I'll retweet a little bit later in the program. If you miss any part of the show, become a member and you'll get all of it ad-free anytime you want. That's tortnetwork.com/join. Okay, let's go to Fox News and Corey Lewandowski. Okay, this is another story of irony and another story of loyalty. Okay. Anyway, so Fox and Friends is going to do a wildly ironic segment here. It is about how Donald Trump is really loyal to his staff. Now, he's got a funny way of showing it. Scaramucci was thrown off the boat, kind of like the original Tea Party, if you will. Instead of tea, he throws staffers. In 10 days, Scaramucci was gone in 10 days. Ryan Priebus is gone, Sean Spicer is gone. And the list goes on and on. He's already got through three communications directors. But nonetheless, here's a hilarious Fox segment on.
We were talking during the break. I was wondering, I know the president has been so loyal to people in his staff, including you, and he's known for this. Do you think he'll find a place for Anthony Scaramucci?
He's been so loyal to you, to people, including you. Corey Lewandowski was fired by Donald Trump. There goes the irony right over their heads. You brought in a guy Trump fired. He was his campaign manager. At a critical time in the campaign, Trump took Corey and went man overboard. Gone, right? You brought on the guy he fired. He says, oh yeah, oh man, wonderful. Because you know why? They think that
I think so. Look, I
audience is just so well programmed that it doesn't really matter. They could tell them that the sky is not blue, and they'll be like, that's right, it's a liberal hoax to say that the sky is blue. That guy was fired by Trump, but Trump was awesome to him and really loyal. What? I'd bring out a different guest. But there is a point to this segment, which is what Lewandowski's gonna get to.
I think so. Look, I think Anthony Scaramucci has been a person who has been a steadfast supporter of this president, both during the campaign, during the transition, and now during the administration. There's a lot of jobs out there in the administration, and the communications director wasn't the right role for him, but my guess is the president will find a spot for him somewhere.
You know what that means? That means, hey, Mooch, be cool, be cool. I know he just threw you under the bus, but don't go calling reporters again and telling people what Trump's actually up to. Remember, we'll find a place for you, Mooch. Don't worry about it. We'll get you some money. Don't worry. We'll get you a job. You know, you of course you're not important anymore. You're not relevant. You're not part of the team anymore. But we'll get you something, and then that'll get you a good amount of funding. Be cool, Mooch. Be cool. That was the whole point of that segment. Again, very ironic to bring out Lewandowski to give that message. Or, you know, when you think about it and realize the final message, that's exactly why they brought on Lewandowski, which is to say, look, he fired me and he wasn't loyal to me, but later he made it up to me. You know what I'm saying, Mooch? Be cool, be a team player. So these Fox guys are unbelievable. By the way, Lewandowski fired again. According to three sources that the Daily Beast is quoting, not from Trump, but one American news network that apparently was a conservative cable station that no one watches anyway, but they thought he was disloyal to them for going on Fox News and CNN too much, so they fired him, according to those sources. Lewandowski then went on to say, and where haven't I gotten fired from? Later, they'll be doing a segment about how loyal One American News Network is to their staffers. All right, anyways, so now let's go on to Lindsey Graham, the atrocious story that I told you about. Okay. Now, the situation has heated up in North Korea. They recently did more intercontinental ballistic missiles tests, and including one that was fired off into the Sea of Japan on Friday. And so everybody's concerned about that. I'm greatly concerned about it. They now believe that these have a range of 3,500 miles. Now, it is not clear that they could load a nuke onto those missiles. So don't panic. Their ability to hit the Western United States is still in great dispute. There are some that are concerned that they might be able to reach Alaska. Whether they could reach it with nukes is a different question. But The whole world is concerned. That part is super legitimate. And it is a tough issue, as Donald Trump recently said. Nobody knew North Korea was this complicated. No, as usual, Mr. President, we all knew. You were the only one who didn't know. Okay, so I grant you that it is a very tough situation and one that is very important for America. But what Lindsey Graham is going to say here is absolutely atrocious. Now, Lindsey Graham from time to time tweaks the president and challenges him on things like the Russian investigation. But when there's war on the line, oh, Lindsey Graham rolling up the sleeves, can't wait. He is one of the top warmongers in the country and certainly in the Senate. The top two are Lindsey Graham and John McCain. There isn't a war that they haven't loved in the last two decades, or a potential war in this case. So don't believe me, believe your own eyes and ears as you watch Lindsey Graham say things that are unconscionable here.
Every military expert says there is no good military option.
They're wrong. There is
What's
a military
a
option to destroy North Korea's program and North Korea itself. He's not going to allow President Trump the ability of this madman to have a missile to hit America. If there's going to be a war to stop him, it will be over there. If thousands die, they're going to die over there. They're not going to die here. And he's told me that to my face.
Okay, let's think about what he just said. To destroy North Korea itself. So there's two components of that that are so horrific. Number one, the people inside North Korea didn't do anything wrong. Yes, the leadership is atrocious and dictatorial and maybe literally the worst in the world. But all those North Koreans are basically hostages of that regime. So to so glibly say, well, thousands will die over there, at least it's not over here. Who cares? They're just North Koreans. I mean, that's in essence what he's saying. They're going to die over there. Go back and watch it again after I'm done with this. Because it is really stunning. They're going to die over there. Who cares? They're just North Koreans. Okay, that part is bad enough. If you're, are you human? Jesus Christ, are you human? But secondarily, it's not going to be a one-sided war. You think they're not going to fire anything? We've known for decades, at a bare minimum, all their missiles are buried in the mountains. They could fire them within a minute and hit South Korea and kill hundreds of thousands of South Koreans. Those are our allies, one of our top allies in the world. It's potential, they have the potential to kill millions of South Koreans. And now it is possible that they couldn't launch a nuclear missile at Seoul, South Korea, let alone Tokyo, and hit Japan, another top ally. And Lindsey Graham says, as long as it's over there and not over here. Oh, we do have a military option. For Lindsey Graham, of course, everything's a military option. Everything is. Oh, it's a war. Who cares? It's not over here. As long as it's not over here and all those Japanese die, who cares? The South Koreans are allies that we said we want to help and protect. Who cares? As long as they're dying over there. Are they even human, those South Koreans and Japanese? You're grotesque, Lindsey Graham. And look at the hubris of this administration. Now Gorka is going to come on. This is one of the guys that Trump likes the most because of how brash he is on air. And listen to how arrogant he is about North Korea. Watch.
North Korea, you know, everybody knows they test fire the missile that's capable of reaching Denver. They did that over the weekend. Can you fast forward to what you think might be the end game with the North Koreans?
Well, look, again, this isn't the Obama White House, so we don't tell our opponents, our adversaries, what we're going to do in advance. But we'd like people to understand that this is a Lilliputian flea. So North Korea is a Stalinist regime, but it can't even feed its own people. We are the United States of America. We're not even a superpower. We are a hyperpower.
This is exactly what I'm worried about. Oh, they're a Lilliputian flea. They're minuscule. We're a hyperpower. You know what that reminds me of? The type of stuff we used to say before the Iraq war. Oh, it'll be over in weeks. One estimate that they gave was that the war would cost us $1.6 billion. Instead, it cost about $1.6 trillion. It didn't last weeks, it lasted decades. They grossly underestimated Iraq. And Iraq had an army, but it was incredibly ineffectual, and we had some sense of that, and still we got bogged down for over a decade. all North Korea is in terms of their production and what their government cares about is the military. They have a gigantic army. They have all those missiles. And those missiles are very hard to hit. Not because they're technologically advanced, but because they buried them and it is hard to find. We don't know where all the missiles are. And South Korea is right next to them. It's not hard to hit South Korea and not that hard to hit Japan. So the hubris and the arrogance of these guys, this is the number one thing I'm concerned about with the Trump administration. Yeah, I know they're going to want to do tax cuts for the rich. It's going to be in the trillions. But Mike Pence is going to do that anyway. All of the Republicans are going to do that anyway. What I'm worried about is that these fools, these incompetent warmongers, are going to stumble into North Korea thinking, what's the big deal? They're just a flea and we're a hyperpower. Let's wipe out all of North Korea, as Lindsey Graham promises. Yes, more war, so that you know who the top donors for Lindsey Graham are, of course. I hope you're sitting, defense contractors. So Lindsey Graham's, more donor money for more war. Humans, they don't even live here. Who cares if they're human? This is the Trump administration, and yes, this is the core of the Republican Party. And if you say, oh no, Trump doesn't represent Republicans, really? He beat 16 other guys in a primary. It sounds like he represents Republican voters. The Republican voters listened to Donald Trump and said, that's our guy. Well, now he's a plague upon all of us. God help South Korea and Japan, let alone us, let alone the rest of the world. Because these guys have no idea what they're doing, no idea what they're messing with. And if they go in with that attitude, the whole world is in for devastation like we haven't seen. I'm serious, that war, this is not hyperbole. I'm not exaggerating. It could easily cost millions of innocent civilian lives. They have untold missiles. It is super easy to hit the millions of people in South Korea. This is a disaster waiting to happen. Get them out of office immediately before we all regret it. Young Turks. Graphics. All right, back on the Young Turks. Sorry, no time for tweets. We got to go, but I'll read you plenty in the second hour, okay? And use YouTube Super Chat. We check that first. Okay, that's a way to communicate with us and help the show as well. So let's go on to the Trump meeting, because that is very, very important. Okay, the Donald Trump Jr. meeting that apparently Senior had a hand in. Okay. So, of course, you remember Donald Trump Jr. meeting with lawyers connected to the Russian government. They sent emails saying, hey, the Russian government can help your father with his campaign. Donald Trump Jr. replied, I love it. Now, we found out all that information later, but in the beginning, all we knew was that there was a meeting. Now, at that point, the administration had a decision to make. Do they come clean about the meeting? Because not only did it involve the president's son, but it involved his campaign manager at the time, Paul Manafort, and Jared Kushner, one of his top advisors. So there they are meeting with a foreign government and trying to get information from them against their opponent. Now that is illegal in a couple of different ways. The advisors rightly said to Donald Trump Sr., the president, they were on Air Force One, they said, we should come clean with this story because it is likely to come out anyway. The New York Times is already onto it. Several other publications are onto it. We should leak it to a friendly publication. They even named one, Circa, and try to do damage control afterwards. They were overruled by the president. And apparently he said, no, we are going to tell them that the meeting was not about the campaign, which is not true. It was. And now it has been confirmed that it was. So that is the story that the Washington Post broke today. So let me give you the details. Flying home from Germany on July 8th, the Washington Post reports, aboard Air Force One, Trump personally dictated a statement in which Trump Jr. said that he and the Russian lawyer had, quote, primarily discussed a program about the adoption of Russian children when they met in June 2016, according to multiple people with knowledge of the deliberations. Now, Trump at that point knows that was not the main point of the meeting. The main point of the meeting, as Donald Trump Jr. later admitted, was to actually get campaign dirt on Hillary Clinton. So that's lie number one. Now, let's move on to lie number two. The statement issued to the New York Times as it prepared an article emphasized that the subject of the meeting was, quote, not a campaign issue at the time. All right, so Washington Post explains what actually happened. Of course, over the next 3 days, multiple accounts of the meeting were provided to the news media as public pressure mounted, with Trump Jr. ultimately acknowledging that he had accepted the meeting after receiving an email promising damaging information about Hillary Clinton as part of a Russian government effort to help his father's campaign. So, why is this so important? Well, let's get into that. As special counsel Robert Mueller looks into potential obstruction of justice as part of his broader investigation of Russian interference in the 2016 election, these advisors worry that the president's direct involvement leaves him needlessly vulnerable to allegations of a cover-up. Now, if you're a savvy commander-in-chief, and by the way, anyone who's managed anything before, let alone something of this magnitude, even if he did something wrong, it appears that he certainly did something wrong, you would want your hands clean. You would assign that to someone else. But Trump is not bright enough, and his advisors are telling him, Mr. President, don't get involved. You already said you fired Comey over the Russia investigation. That's already an obstruction of justice possibility right there. So no, he's like, no, I got this. All right, let's make sure that we say it wasn't about the campaign. But Mr. President, it was about the campaign. We know it. Just say it wasn't about the campaign. There's two things here. One is he's a pathological liar. He can't help himself. He's like, why don't we just lie? It's okay. Hey, Donald, you're not a reality show host anymore. Back then, people weren't investigating your life. You could claim you're worth $10 billion and nobody would prove otherwise. You could claim all sorts of things and people didn't find out. Now, people find out, but he still doesn't get it. And secondarily, people are constantly confused. Why is he needlessly getting involved? Because he knows something you don't know, which is that he did it. He does have a deal with the Russians. Why do you think he's doing all of this to cover it up? And firing Comey now wants to fire Sessions and Mueller and is personally writing the responses to the papers. They're constantly confused. They're like, I wonder why he's doing that. Because he knows something you don't know. He does have a deal with the Russians. It's not that complicated. All right. So, but to be fair, they're seeing if he had direct involvement in this. Let's see if he did in this particular case. Air Force One took off from Germany shortly after 6 p.m., about noon in Washington. In a forward cabin, Trump was busy working on his son's statement. According to the people with knowledge of the events, the president dictated the statement to Hicks, who served as a go-between with Trump Jr., who was not on the plane, sharing edits between the two men, according to people with knowledge of the discussions. This is not conjecture on our part. These are people who were on the plane, who were advisors, who saw it happening, and who said, yes, the president was dictating the response of the New York Times, which we now know for a fact is filled with lies. Now, look, some people are saying, well, it's okay, the president can lie to the press. That's true. That's not illegal to lie to the press. I don't think it's a good idea, but it's not illegal. But if you know that there is an active investigation, it could easily be witness tampering. If Donald Trump Jr. took a meeting with the Russians and lied about it, and they're investigating a connection, as Mueller is now, between Russia and the Trump campaign, is Donald Trump Jr. a potential witness? Almost 100% certain that he is. So that could easily be witness tampering, and it shows evidence of a consciousness of guilt. Because not only are you messing with what a witness is saying in public, and then potentially to investigators, But you know exactly what you're doing. You're dictating the note. If anyone didn't do it, they would not get this involved. That's unbelievable. And number two, even if you're trying to cover it up, if you had any intelligence at all, this is not how you would do it. You would go about it in a much savvier way. But he's not that bright. What did I tell you from day one? Because of all the connections we already know that are public, it is very likely he had a deal with the Russians. And part two is equally important. I've been saying from day one, he's too stupid to cover it up. He's doing these potential crimes out in the open where we can all see them. In some ways, Mueller's investigation is incredibly difficult because you're investigating the president of the United States. You have to be 100% sure and have the best evidence in the world. So this is not a normal person. Circumstantial evidence, although it is plentiful, is not going to be able to be enough to charge a sitting president of the United States. But God, the presidents make it easy for him. Maybe not on the core charge, but now on obstruction of justice, witness tampering, it's a layup. All right, so we go to the White House advisor, who's one of the sources here, and they continue to be perplexed. They say about what Trump did there. This was, quote, unnecessary. Now someone can claim he's the one who attempted to mislead. Somebody can argue the president is saying he doesn't want you to say the whole truth. Yeah, that's exactly what they can say and likely will say, because that's exactly what happened, even according to you, the person who's telling this to the Washington Post. But even those guys, they still don't get it. They're like, it's so unnecessary. Why is he doing this cover up? Why is he doing a cover up? Boy, that really is a complicated question. Okay, one last one. Now, this is a lawyer, Peter Zeidenberg. And he worked in previous administrations, I think a Republican one, but I'll look that up for you in a second. He said, the thing that really strikes me about this is the stupidity of involving the president. They are still treating this like a family-run business, and they have a PR problem. What they don't seem to understand is that this is a criminal investigation involving all of them. Okay, well, hold on one second. Let me get you the guy. He was a special prosecutor under George W. Bush. Zeidenberg was. But like the other Republicans, he keeps wondering, why don't they understand this is a criminal investigation? No, you don't understand. Trump knows it's a criminal investigation, and he knows that unless he obstructs it in every way possible, they will find out what he actually did, which is potentially way worse than what we already know about obstruction of justice or witness tampering. He's like, witness tampering, wait till they find out what we're covering up. So oftentimes people will say the cover up is worse than the crime. My guess is, given how furiously he's trying to cover it up here, and given his business dealings in the past, no, the cover up is terrible and now out in the open. But what they're covering up is likely to be far, far worse. But for that, we're going to have to hold. All we know is the apparent crimes out in the open in trying to stop this investigation. All right, now I want to go to one other aspect of this story that's fun. No, go ahead, go to Jay Sekulow, okay? So Donald Trump apparently dictated a memo to the New York Times lying about Donald Trump Jr.'s meetings with people they believe to be connected to the Russian government. So now the Washington Post has broken that story, and we know that Trump dictated the memo himself personally and was definitely involved. So now we go to his lawyer. Before this story broke, he had gone on air earlier as the Donald Trump Jr. Emails were going out there. And everybody was saying, did the president know? And here's what his lawyer had to say.
So the president signed off on that statement. Does he feel he was misled by his son and by Jared Kushner if indeed they didn't tell him about these emails that they both received?
The president didn't sign off on anything. He was coming back from the G20. The statement that was released on Saturday was released by Donald Trump Jr., and I'm sure in consultation with his lawyers. The president wasn't involved in that.
Well, the New York Times says that he was involved in it, that several people on the plane were involved in it as well. So you're disputing
That's incorrect.
That account from the New York Times.
Yes.
The president didn't sign off on anything. That appears to be a bold-faced lie. But he's not done lying yet. One more.
The president did not draft the response. The response came from Donald Trump Jr., and I'm sure in consultation with his lawyer.
You were very careful to say the president didn't draft the statement. That isn't what I asked. Did the president get a heads up on the statement? Did he sign off on the statement? Was he asked to read the statement before it was given the New York Times on Air Force One?
No, I mean, I can't say whether the president was told a statement was going to be coming from his son on that. I didn't have that conversation. And let me say this. the president, but I do want to be clear that the president was not involved in the drafting of the statement and did not issue the statement. It came from Donald Trump Jr. So that's what I can tell you, because that's what we know.
At the time, was not involved in drafting the statement. Now we know from people on the plane and inside administration officials, those are Trump guys, saying yes, he drafted the statement, very much involved in drafting the statement. That is Trump's lawyer clearly lying on national television. Maybe you're not surprised, but at least for the press, they're like, okay, it's hard to say he said, she said on this one. He appears to be definitively lying. Sekulow puts out a statement now that he's been caught red-handed. He says, apart from being of no consequence, the characterizations are that he was lying are misinformed, inaccurate, and not pertinent. I love the beginning of that. Apart from being of no consequence. In other words, yeah, I might have lied, but come on, what's the big deal? It's of no consequence. You're gonna bust my chops over some brazen lies I said on TV. Come on, this is the Trump administration. We have alternative facts. When Donald Trump Jr.'s attorney is asked about, okay, wait, so who did draft a statement? He said it was, quote, a communal situation. In other words, yes, they definitely drafted it together. That couldn't be any clearer. Okay, well, now you know. When the going gets tough, you don't want a criminal lawyer. You want a criminal lawyer. We miss you, Breaking Bad. Okay, well, this is a new version of Breaking Bad. All right, Better Call Sekulow. Now, let's go on to the Seth Rich story. Okay. Well, we will finally be covering the Seth Rich conspiracy. Turns out there is one, but not in the ways that some people thought. So, if you don't know, Seth Rich was a person who worked at the DNC. He unfortunately was killed, and police say it was during an attempted robbery. Now, that set off a lot of conspiracies because people started saying that he is the one who had leaked the DNC emails to WikiLeaks. Well, it's not just people, we know who it was. And now there is a shocking twist in the story. Now, Fox News had put that story out in the first place. They have now retracted it. The guy who put it out, among the people who put it out and did an investigation on it for Fox News, was a guy named Rod Wheeler. Well, Rod Wheeler is now suing Fox News, saying, you guys said I had some information on this investigation. When I didn't, you made up my quotes. Wow. And he's revealing what was the actual conspiracy, which was to lie about Seth Rich's murder in order to distract from the Russian investigation. So who's the guy who put him up to it? According to the lawsuit, it is a guy named Ed Butowski. He also goes on Fox News from time to time, but mainly he's a very wealthy Republican donor. So he contacted Wheeler, whose expertise is law enforcement. He was a former homicide detective and now is a crime analyst on Fox News. So Butowski calls Rod Wheeler and says, hey, we're going to look into this Seth Rich story. And in fact, even the president is interested in it. Now, that is going to be super relevant. We're going to get to that a little bit later in the story. Now, Wheeler, a Fox News commentator and private investigator hired by wealthy right-wing investor Ed Butowski to investigate the murder, in May claimed to have evidence of contact between Rich and WikiLeaks and alleged that police were covering it up. So those are some pretty heavy charges. And he said, that's what Butowski told me, and we went to go investigate that. Now, the person who wound up eventually reporting it on Fox News was a person named Malia Zimmerman. She is a so-called reporter for Fox News. Now, she's not an opinion host. She's supposed to be straight news for Fox News. Now, she had two quotes from Rod Wheeler in the story. Rod Wheeler now says they were wholly made up, that he never said these things. So here is the original story from Zimmerman. My investigation up to this point shows there was some degree of email exchange between Seth Rich and WikiLeaks, said Wheeler. Wheeler now says, no, I never said that. Another part of the story. My investigation, again, this is quoting Rod Wheeler. My investigation shows someone within the DC government, a Democratic National Committee, or Clinton team is blocking the murder investigation from going forward. Wheeler said, that is unfortunate. Seth Rich's murder is unsolved as a result of that. Now think about how atrocious this is. They're basically implying that either someone at the DNC or Hillary Clinton's team murdered someone else that was part of the DNC team, Seth Rich, and is now using the police to cover up that murder. First of all, that's nuts. Second of all, it didn't happen. They made it up. And third of all, what a, I mean, you're accusing them of murder, but I don't know. Have they no shame? And I guess the answer to that is, of course they don't. And I guess now Rod Wheeler, realizing that he got played, thinks, oops, I didn't know they were going to make up quotes about me, and I didn't know what the plot was from the first place. So now they take Zimmerman's, what does Fox News do next? They take Zimmerman's article and they run wild with it. Then Sean Hannity comes and says, this quote blows the whole Russia collusion narrative completely out of the water. Aha, now we get to why they're doing this in the first place. Because they think if we can distract people and get them to think that the Russians didn't put out those stolen emails, it was that guy Seth Rich, and then Hillary Clinton had him murdered, well then obviously it wasn't Russia, so we're done with it and we'll end the investigation. First of all, what a dumb plot. It was uncovered right away, not this part about how they set it up and who they set it up with, but the fact that it was false was immediately apparent, and even Fox News had to retract the story. So now we find out the details of how they made it up. So now we'll go to David Folkenfilk at NPR. Wheeler alleges he was told the Trump administration was monitoring their progress. Whoa, okay, this takes it to a whole different level, and this is not something we knew before. So apparently, this went all the way up to Sean Spicer. They had a meeting, Butowski did, and the guys working on this from Fox News with Sean Spicer, at the time the White House press secretary. Spicer now confirms that they had that meeting. And he said, well, I mean, Butowski's a wealthy Republican donor, so I did him a favor and I took the meeting. That doesn't mean anything. And you know, you can judge for yourself if you believe Sean Spicer's part of it, but whether the president's involved is also something that's going to come up in a second. But Spicer and the White House definitely did take a meeting with the guys who made up the Seth Rich story. So now back to NPR. Doug Witter, Wheeler's lawyer, is now claiming that his client, quote, unfortunately was used as a pawn by Ed Butowski, Fox News, and the Trump administration to try and steer away the attention that was being given about the Russian hacking of the DNC email. So that was the whole point of this in the first place. Let me do a quick timeline for you guys so you understand exactly the context here. And this is from Mediaite/NPR. So those two news organizations had this. In his report, Folkenfilk provides a stunning timeline of how the report came to be according to the lawsuit. May 9th, Trump fires FBI Director James Comey, who was overseeing an investigation into the Russian election meddling. May 10th, Zimmerman and Butowski call Wheeler to say they have an FBI source confirming emails were sent from Seth Rich to WikiLeaks. We now know, of course, that's not true. On May 11th, Zimmerman sends Wheeler a draft of her story, which is to run initially on the network website. It includes no quotes from Wheeler. And later, of course, she inserted the fake quotes. May 14th, according to these allegations. May 14th, Butowski sends an email to Fox and Friends hosts Ainsley Earhart, Steve Doocy, and Brian Kilmeade, quote, coaching them on how to frame the Rich story. In the email, Butowski claimed the story would refute the notion of coordination between the Trump campaign and Russia. And finally, on May 15th, Fox and Friends covers the story in the morning after it was published on FoxNews.com. On affiliate Fox 5 DC, it goes national before unraveling completely. Wheeler would later claim that the quotations of Zimmerman's report were, quote, fabricated and untrue. So now we know Spicer at least took a meeting, but was the president involved? Well, we have a text sent from Butowski to Rod Wheeler. It is now in evidence. The text says, quote, not to add any more pressure, but the president just read the article. He wants the article out immediately. It's now all up to you, but don't feel the pressure. In other words, if Butowski is right, and I hope the authorities talk to him and get him on the record and under oath, If Witowski was telling the truth there, it went all the way up to the president. Now, by the way, it would not be the first time that the president got involved in his own PR. Historically, he's done that many times, including a story that just came out today about how he helped to write Don Jr.'s statement on the Russian lawyer meeting that he had. So now back to law news. Even after Wheeler presented his concerns regarding the allegedly fabricated quotes to Fox News, he was told to think of the story as an important political narrative that would replace the Russian story and that he needed to, quote, stick to the script. Man, there is a ton of stuff to investigate here. So I hope that investigators are getting busy figuring out who did this, because this is some pretty serious stuff. The accusation that FoxNews.com published Malia Zimmerman's story to help detract from coverage of the Russia collusion issue is completely erroneous, according to Jay Wallace, that is Fox News's president. But listen to that quote carefully. It was written in a very lawyerly way. They're saying the accusation that the story was done to help the Trump administration is false. They're not saying they didn't make up the story. They're not saying that they weren't involved with Witowski. They're not even saying that they didn't make up the Rod Wheeler quotes. They're just saying, well, you can't read our mind, so you don't know for a fact that we were trying to help the Trump administration. You can tell in their denials, because they check with their lawyers, if they did it or not. That is a non-denial denial. It gets better. There's one more from their statement from their denial that gives you a sense of what they actually have. They said, we have no evidence that Rod Wheeler was misquoted by Zimmerman. They didn't say he wasn't misquoted. They said, we have no evidence that he wasn't misquoted, that he was misquoted. So in other words, I didn't investigate it. So right now, I don't have any evidence that we made it up. They're not denying it. They're just saying, I don't have the evidence yet. That is a terrible denial. Well, how about Witowski? Because he's probably going to stand up for this and not go into hiding or anything and tell us the truth, right? Well, interesting. Here's a tweet. Ed Witowski appears to have deleted his Twitter account this morning, which probably won't please a judge. That might be destroying evidence. And you can see there, if you go to his Twitter account, it says, sorry, that page doesn't exist. By the way, when are you guys going to learn? People can get your old account and all the tweets in it. So stupid. Why didn't you just plant a giant red flag on your account going, here, check this out. I'm trying to destroy evidence. Gee, I wonder if he's guilty, but I love his excuse. You're going to love it too. On the phone with Ed Witowski, he tells me he suspended his own Twitter account temporarily because, quote, people are so mean. Yeah, that's probably why. Not because of the investigation that's going on about all the lies that you made up and how it might be connected to the Trump administration and Fox News. No, it's just because people are mean on Twitter. You just found that out, by the way. Okay, you must be a real investigator. No wonder you were a Fox News analyst. And then finally, the lawsuit quotes a May 14th voicemail Witowski left for Wheeler, claiming he had, quote, the full attention of the White House on this. But Witowski now insists he was joking. This is the excuse they use every time. After getting caught red-handed saying something terrible or misleading or lying, they go, oh, that was just a joke. It's so funny when I tell you that the president is reading your article and you should immediately print it and you should make sure that you take off all the pressure from him on the Russia investigation. What a funny joke. That is a miserable defense. Please try that in court. Please. Okay, so now we know the real Seth Rich story. Okay, one last story for you guys, and it involves the Democrats. Okay. So I've been saying all along that the one thing that I guarantee the Republicans will do, and Donald Trump, even in his incredible incompetence, will actually get done, is giant tax cuts for the rich. Now, they don't say it's going to be tax cuts for the rich. When you read their proposal, you're like, oh my God, that's trillions of dollars in tax cuts for the rich and for multinational corporations. But they, in order to make it sound better, they call it tax reform. Now, have the Republicans ever reformed taxes and moved them up? No. Have they ever moved them up for the rich or corporations? No. No, tax reform means we move them down for the rich and down for corporations. Sometimes they'll throw a small tax cut for the middle class too, so they can say, I mean, you guys got something to do. You got 5% of the tax cuts. Yeah, enjoy, right? You got the crumbs off our table. But tax reform does not mean increases. It definitely, definitely means cuts. We've already seen the proposals. So what are the Democrats going to do? They did a good job of resisting on healthcare, and they're bragging about it now. They held their whole caucus. That Republican proposal was polling at 17%. If you can't hold your entire caucus on something polling at 17%, you should get out of politics immediately. Anyway, but give them credit, they did hold, and I'm very happy about that. So are they going to continue to resist on tax cuts? Looks like no. I told you. All right, let's go to Reuters for the story. US Senate Democrats offered to work with Republicans on a bipartisan tax reform package on Tuesday, but only if it does not cut taxes for the wealthy, add to the federal deficit, or allow Republicans to enact legislation on their own. Laugh along with me. Which Republican tax proposal doesn't cut taxes for the rich? This is a preposterous statement. It helps the Republican cover up. Okay, continuing. In Tuesday's letter, Democrats said bipartisan tax reform should offer no relief for the wealthy. Come on, I just stop reading it. Mnuchin says, oh yeah, 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 there's gonna be no absolute tax cut for the upper class. No one in their right mind believes that. Really, Chuck Schumer, no tax cuts for the rich? That's gonna be what the Republican proposal is? You're even acknowledging that as a possibility is to help their cover up. Calling it tax reform is to help their cover up. You already know what's in the proposal. We covered it on the Young Turks. You know what it's in there. It's trillions of dollars in tax cuts for the rich. What is the bipartisan part of that? What is the part where they don't cut? It is not conceivable that the Republicans say, oh, you know what? You know, Chuck, you're right. Let's just do a tax cut for the poor and the middle class, but definitely not for the rich. Okay. US Senate Democrats in that letter said tax reform cannot be a cover story for delivering tax cuts to the wealthiest. Okay, they're not gonna fight him, they're not. Okay, it gets worse. All right, so 43 Senate Democrats and 2 independents signed the letter. I think even the well-meaning there should not have signed the letter. I'll get to that in a second. Absent were the names of 3 Democrats facing re-election next year: Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, Joe Donnelly of Indiana, and Joe Manchin of West Virginia. Do you understand that those 3 holdouts, they're not like, oh no, I don't want tax cuts for the rich. They're saying, I won't even sign a letter saying that I want it to be revenue neutral, or I don't want tax cuts for the rich. Those 3 are saying, no, I kind of agree with the Republicans. I don't mind if there's tax cuts for the rich. Of course they're gonna pass it. It's incredible naivete to not understand that this is the number one thing that donors want. There's no way they don't get what they want on this issue. No way. This is why I always tell you ahead of time. So it's not Monday morning quarterbacking. You'll see. And yes, I told you from day one, some Democrats will help them and will sign it. Okay, so now even the Democrats say, oh no, but we need tax reform because corporate taxes are so high. That is grossly misleading. Now let me show you. Because yes, the highest rate is 35% for taxes for corporations. But the reality is they don't pay that. In fact, here, let me skip to graphic 12 first. This is quoting a report, and New York Times wrote about this. The report found that even when foreign, state, and local taxes were included, which is not normally included in those calculations, but they threw all that into, the tax rate of large companies rose only to 16.9% of total income, still well below the official 35%. In other words, they're not paying 35%. It's a lie. They're actually paying less than 17%, about half of what they claim they're paying. That's the real taxes that they're paying. So now some Democrats will say, no, that's what we're gonna reform it, and we're gonna move it down to 20 or 25%, but we're gonna take away all the loopholes, so it's gonna be a real 20, 25%. No, you're not. You're not gonna take away all the loopholes. You're gonna keep most of the loopholes. You'll take away a couple of small loopholes, and then they'll cheat on the 20 or 25% and bring it way down. And even if you took away a couple of small loopholes, they're gonna put them back in 2 or 3 years when no one's paying attention. This is all a giant scam. So who's paying more taxes? Because this is all about wealth redistribution, but not in the way that you imagine. They redistribute the wealth to the top. So back in 1952, here's what the taxes looked like. This the pie chart on the left there. Corporations, as you can see there, paid 32.1% of all the taxes. In 2015, they redistributed the wealth right to them, and they moved the taxes to you. So if you think taxes are high, that's because they are high on you, on the middle class. They moved all the taxes to the payroll tax, which is what the middle class pays. That's the most regressive tax we have. And corporations now pay less than 11%. It went from 32 to less than 11%. So they're not taxed at a historically high rate. They're taxed at a historically low rate in reality. So for the Democrats to help Republicans with that nonsense talking point is only because they want to help their donors. There is no justification for it. Okay, well, you could say, well, it was all the corporate Democrats always tell me. Cenk, you have to be practical. You know, sometimes you just have to take reform a little bit at a time and change a little bit at a time. First of all, this is not moving the ball in our direction. So why do I have to move the ball in the wrong direction a little bit at a time? In fact, this would move it a lot at one time. That doesn't make any sense. They say, oh, but then we might lose. Really? Did you ever look at the polling? Or are you just lying to help your donors? Because if you looked at the polling, here's what you would have seen. Americans, this is according to a Gallup poll, recent Gallup poll. Americans say the upper income pays too much tax, according to 63% of Americans. And how about corporations? Those poor corporations, Republicans and now some Democrats are telling us to pay too much taxes. Well, Americans do not agree. 67% of Americans say corporations pay too little in taxes. Helping the Republicans in cutting taxes on corporations, if you cared about winning elections, is a disastrous idea. But they care more about making sure their donors are happy. Any well-meaning progressive who signed that letter trying to make sure they don't give tax cuts to the rich, get out, get out, get out, get out. It's a trick, it's a trap, okay? This is the corporate Democrats' efforts to help the Republicans actually pass tax cuts. You should get your name off that letter immediately. So they're gonna do it and the Democrats are gonna help them. Look, maybe I'm wrong. So we're gonna ask you guys, because look, this is a fairly large progressive audience, and maybe you guys don't agree. Maybe you think, oh, unity, and we should work together and make sure that we do bipartisanship with the Republicans to do tax reform. So I'm gonna ask it. Now, obviously, you can tell what my opinion is. I'm not hiding in the least bit. But I'm gonna ask it in the most Republican friendly way. In the spirit, and this, oh, the mainstream media love this framing. In the spirit of bipartisanship, should Democrats work with Republicans on tax reform? I'm skewing the poll in their direction, not my direction. I'm not calling it tax cuts, I'm calling it tax reform. And I'm saying in the spirit of bipartisanship. So I'm curious what you guys are gonna say, because you're all independent minded. You might say, no, Cenk, bipartisanship's a wonderful thing. And by tax reforms, maybe they just mean they're gonna raise taxes. Anyway, I look forward to your response, tytnetwork.com/taxes. My guess is that since you're watching and getting your news, whether it's here or reading it online instead of from the schmucks on TV, you realize exactly what this game is. Resist. Really? Okay, if this is your idea of resistance, no thank you. And if this is your idea of party unity, no thank you. I will fight this so-called tax reform to the very end, and you all should too, because this is the greatest American robbery you're ever gonna see, Young Turks.